Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey there, friends, and welcome to my favorite part of the afternoon, getting to spend time with you, prescribing hope for healthy families. And even if it's Monday, and maybe you're feeling that, I don't know, I'm feeling that a little bit today. Wherever you are, whatever you are doing, if you are at home, if you're at work, if you're in the carpool line, if you're out walking in the neighborhood, if you're at the gym, wherever you are, we're so glad that you are here. We are so thankful for our listeners who join us to find hope for healthy families. It's so encouraging to know that we are not alone and that there are people listening in who think, I want to give my family hope for the future, especially in a world that just seems completely chaotic. We're so glad to have you here. We hope that you're listening in to our series on 52 Habits for Healthy Families every Friday. We'll be talking about that, the habit of the week. The habit this week is gratitude, otherwise known as vitamin G. You would not believe all of the health benefits there are to gratitude. It's like God knew what he was doing when he designed our hearts and minds and gave us health benefits emotionally, physically, mentally with gratitude. And it can be hard to find gratitude in your life circumstances because life is hard. We know that. We know that there are trials, there are traumas, there are tragedies that happen. But today we have a guest who's been on the show once before, who's coming back to share more of her message of gratitude and hope. Lisa Apollo is a speaker. She's a best-selling author of Life Can Be Good Again, Putting Your World Back Together After It All Falls Apart. And Lisa inspires women to find hope in grief and deepen their faith in life storms. Her work has been featured all over the place. Life Today, Cornerstone Television Network, Insight for Living, Ann Voskamp, Proverbs 31 Ministries, Her View from Home, Risen Motherhood. I mean, you name it. And she has several best-selling books, including Praying Through Loneliness and So God Made a Grandma. Her next book releases with Bethany House in 2026, and she is a former litigating attorney, but she writes now at lisaapollo.com. That's APPELO. And she serves on the executive team for Compel with Proverbs 31 Ministry. She is a single mom of seven. And is it Nani or Noni?
We say Nani.
Nani. It's Nani to 13 on the coast of Florida after losing your precious husband. So, Lisa, thank you so much for being with us today. We are just so honored to have you back.
Oh, I'm happy to be back. And I am really, you know, hard topic, but I think one that needs to be explored and given space. So I'm glad that we're talking about this today.
I really am too. And you know, we love grandparents here. I believe grandparents have so much potential. They have time that sometimes parents don't have. They have wisdom sometimes that parents don't have. Even though parents are navigating new things, there is something to be said for life experience. And before, Lisa, you shared with us your experience in losing your husband. And today we are going to talk about single grandparenting as you move into that phase of your life. And we know that people are not alone in that. The number of grandparents who are doing this solo is higher than we might think. You brought this actually to our attention. You said the average age for widows in the United States is 59 and a half, 2,800 new widows each day. And then many grandparents are single because of a divorce or have a living spouse who's unable to co-grandparent because of health issues, life choices, all kinds of things. So before we dive into that, let's go back and just refresh any memories or to acquaint our listeners with your story. Can you just tell us a little bit about your family and how you came to this journey and emerging into single grandparenting?
Yeah. So thank you, Jessica. You know, life was sailing along not perfectly, but it was definitely the life that I had planned and the life that I wanted. We had seven children. We were, you know, life was full and busy. And on what felt like a very normal Friday morning, I woke to my husband's funny breathing. And within hours, I found myself in the emergency room where they, you know, the doctor had pronounced him dead. And he had suffered a major cardiac event, and they were never able to revive him. And so we, you know, I began walking my seven children through grief. I, you know, found myself navigating just excruciating grief and really a life that I didn't expect and I did not want. And here we are 13 years later. You know, I have seen God's faithfulness in so many ways, walking us through that. And now I'm in a new season. My last child, my one who was 4 years old when her daddy went to heaven, is a senior. And my other children, five of them are married and have children of their own, families of their own. And I'm now, like you said, a nanny to 13. And so as I, you know, transition to this new phase, it's not the same kind of grief that I had, you know, that new, fresh, raw pain. It's softer, and yet it's always there. It's kind of laced in the family dinners, in the moments, in all kinds of ways where I find myself single grandparenting these sweet grands.
Well, I would encourage our listeners, if that story resonates with you at all, you shared it so beautifully, so tenderly in your book, Life Can Be Good Again. And I would encourage our listeners to get a copy of that, because such an encouraging testimony of faith, just in the midst of the unimaginable, Lisa, you just finding hope. And I think that is so admirable. And looking at your journey now and becoming a grandparent, you know, I think that there's a lot of people who think that, who have maybe haven't experienced grief like you've described. And you think of grief as a kind of linear journey, like over time, time heals all wounds, it gets better. But I'm sure that this has come to you as a bit of a surprise. I'm sure when your husband passed away, you didn't immediately think, oh, one day I'll be a grandparent by myself, or what will that look like, or will I? It's just this new phase of life that brings this new perspective there. And you have said that you are, one, stewarding the joy of grandparenting for two. What do you mean by that? And how did you come, how are you coming along this journey? And I'm sure you can encourage other listeners who know that grief is messy, looping, back and forth, unpredictable. It's not linear.
Yes. Well, you know, to be a steward is to be entrusted with something, be entrusted with something of value, to take care of it and to be responsible for that, right? And we know, like, you know, I'd always heard that term as a young mom, a new mom, that we were, you know, entrusted with these children, and that we were stewards of what God had given us. But I see that at a whole new level now as I have these grandchildren, and that I'm not just here physically taking care of them, but that I am, you know, that I'm responsible for teaching them God's truth and discipling them. And, you know, I had always dreamed that Dan and I would be doing this together. It's not that I, you know, that's just where our mind goes. I was talking to a very, very young widow. She was 21 when she was widowed. And I was telling her this, you know, single parenting and stage, and she's still in the throes of parenting. And she said, even she at 21, as young as she was when she got married and became a widow, had always imagined that she and her husband would be, you know, they'd grow old together and they would be doing this one day. And so as I, you know, it really hit me, I think, one day as I was holding my newest one, who's just 5 months old now, my newest grand little girl. And I was looking at her and just kind of a poignant moment where I thought, man, I am stewarding this privilege of discipling you and sowing into you for two, because Dan would have been here and he would have done a marvelous job and he would have passed on his family history, and he would have taught you lessons and that wisdom that is so hard earned that you talked about, that God hasn't, you know, taught us over all these years, that he would have helped shape them in ways. And I can't replace him. I can't be both grandmom and granddad. But I can let that privilege and that responsibility just give me a deeper purpose. I think more than anything, that's what it is, Jessica, is that it's not a bigger weight, but just a heightened sense of purpose, that a deep purpose that maybe because I know this world is fleeting and that eternity is real and it is closer than we can imagine. And what matters and what doesn't, you know, anybody who's walked through loss has let that suffering sift out the junk And they now know what matters and what doesn't. And they can take those lessons that God has taught them in the suffering and use that to sow back into their kids. And you're right. Grief is not linear. And we don't, I thought it was, even, you know, in that those first moments, you know, the only thing I knew about grief was I'd heard about these five stages. And I thought if I ticked them all off and did the hard work that I would like get through it. But it's not, and it bubbles to the top. And like I said, it's not pain, it's not raw, but it's always there. And just sometimes missing, you know, what he would have done, how he would have grandparented, and the relationship that these children would have had with him. But just letting that give me a deeper sense of purpose, you know, as I am a nanny to them.
You know, that honestly gives me goosebumps, Lisa, just to hear you describe that. I mean, what a, just having a heightened sense of purpose, knowing so intimately the fragility of life, you know, being able to use that as a gift to cherish every moment that you have. And, you know, you have 13 grandbabies now, which is beautiful. And you just said that it was after the last one. I mean, you would have think that, that these feelings started to emerge in you. You would have think that you would have thought that that would have happened after the first, the second, the third. But how has that journey been in having 13? Have there been ebbs and flows and changes in how you experience each one of those births? Is it different depending on which kid you have? What has that experience been like?
Yeah, well, we've had a baby boom, so they all came fast and furious.
That's great. Cousins
the
are the best.
Only seven. I know. It has been a little bit different. And, you know, it's also triggered, I think, something that I knew was that my younger children, who were 4 and 6 when their dad died, would grow into their grief. I did not realize that my older son, who was 19, would still experience new, just as I am, new layers of loss and the way it impacts. I remember one Father's Day calling all my kids. I wasn't with each of them, and so I had called the older ones, see how they were doing, and my older son had just become a dad, so I was a new grandmother, and I called him, and he said, he was crying. And he said, you know, I should be so happy. I've got a wonderful wife. I've got this beautiful child. I've got a good job. And I am so sad today. And I said, the one person that you would love to give you an attaboy and to celebrate this with is not here. And that's so normal. And so I think grief is like that. You know, people talk about grief triggers or how sometimes it will just bubble up in the most normal or weird moments. That's just kind of the nature of it. And I think we just have to learn to be okay with it, to know that some Christmases are going to be wonderful. We're just going to be caught up in the just all the present opening and the joy of the on these little faces and the, you know, a joy of having a new baby in the family. And then sometimes grief is really going to be present either for your child or for me as a grandparent. And just to be okay with that and to let the feelings come and then just, you know, let them do the work, which is to say, you know, Lord, like he meant something and he still means something and he's still impacting us. And you are faithful in all of this.
That is absolutely beautiful. And knowing and seeing Dan's legacy live on and knowing that you are there to honor it, to steward it, to teach them the lessons that you know that he would have wanted them to have. I mean, what a precious gift in that. And I think it's really important what you said, Lisa, to give everybody grace and space to grieve in their own journey and their own time, because those different triggers can be different for everybody. And grief can be like a storm that comes and maybe it's a personal storm. Like, I don't see it. I see the sunshine, but you're experiencing the rain. But regardless of that, God's promises, they do shine like a beacon of hope. And we know that God says that he is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. And loss, though it changes our lives, it doesn't diminish God's love for us or our plan for his future. That's today's prescription for hope. How do we honor the past but inspire the future? Lisa, I've got a lot more questions for you about single grandparenting when we come back from this break. We'll see you in just a minute. Don't go away. Meet Kelsey. When she found out she was pregnant, she wasn't sure where to turn. But after meeting with the counselors at a preborn network clinic who loved and supported her, and after hearing her baby's heartbeat on a free ultrasound, she chose life.
When a mother looks at her child through a sonogram, it does something to you. You know, I ended up deciding to keep my son, who is now 5 years old today. He's amazing. He brings absolute joy to my heart. I could not imagine life without him. Not only did they help me save his life, they saved my life.
By introducing a woman to her baby on ultrasound, a baby's chance at life doubles. If you have the means, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, helping to rescue 200 babies. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or donate securely at preborn.com. That's preborn.com. For Dr. Nurse Mama, I'm Jessica Peck.
Things are getting real. Jesus, take the wheel. Only way I'm getting to the other side. Days are getting dark. Life's a little hard. Blinded, but I'm trying not to lose sight. I don't got this. I know you got this. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I believe it before I see it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know you're gonna see me through it. If anybody can do it. God, I know in the trial, in the pain, fire, in the rain, you're gonna see me through it. You're gonna see me through it. If anybody can do it. And whenever my heart runs away, you say the day you're gonna see me through it.
Welcome back, friends. That is See Me Through It by Brandon Heath. And no matter what you're going through today, God is going to see you through it. And our guest today is a living, breathing, speaking testimony of that. Today, we're joined by Lisa Apollo, author of Life Can Be Good Again. She's an advocate for hope in life's hardest seasons. She is a seeker and a finder of joy. She is a single mom of seven, a grandmother to 13. Lisa's story, losing her husband Dan more than a decade ago when her children were younger, it's a testament to resilience and faith and the enduring power of family legacy. Today's prescription for hope is, how do we honor the past but inspire the future? And that is exactly what she is doing. Now, we're not here to say that grief is easy. Grief is not easy. And there are some days it feels heavier than other days. But again, Lisa has lived the testimony and is here to tell her story that life can be good again. And I'm sure that it is so good on so many days with 13 grandbabies. Lisa, that is some goodness there, because let me tell you, kids can bring joy into the world like nobody else can. And I'm sure that you have experienced that. And so let's talk a little bit more about how being a single grandparent maybe has made grief more difficult in some ways, but maybe more bearable in other ways, just having the joy of new life.
Yes, there is definitely a joy. There is a lot of joy. There is also sorrow. Anytime there is a big loss, as we talked about, it's not like that chapter, like there's closure. I just used air quotes, and that door closes and we move on and we never feel it again or think about it again. You know, the last trip that Dan and I took together, we had a very rare weekend away. It was actually a couple days. He had a work trip and he'd asked me to go with him. And, you know, with all the kids at home, it was just so rare that we got away, but I went with him on this work trip. And so he was out at his meetings during the day and we were down in the Keys. So I'm sitting in the hammock and, had my book. And as I'm reading, this grandparent couple walked down to the beach with their three little grandchildren, and I was just kind of watching them. And, you know, the grandmother was setting up the towels, and she was setting up the place with all the, like, you know, the cooler and the snacks, and she was kind of organizing their little area. And the grandfather, one by one, was taking the grandchildren and setting up their mask and their snorkel or fence and taking them out into this, like, shallow water. It just kind of went out into no shore breaks or anything in the Keys, but taking them out and kind of teaching them how to snorkel. And I just went forward in my mind like a decade, and I thought, that will be us one day. That will be Dan. He loves the water. He loves adventure. He'll be doing that with his kids, and I'll be tending all the snacks and all the things, and just stored up that moment, and never expecting that, you know, 2 days later that I would be in the emergency room and that I would be kissing him for the last time and then making funeral arrangements. It's just so poignant to me. It's so that was one of the last memories that I kind of tucked away in hopes and dreams. And so those are the kinds of things that bubble up. You know, however somebody's come to single grandparenting, whether it's been by a divorce that's been years, whether it's been a recent death where they were grandparenting together and now they're single grandparenting, or like me, they're you know, a little bit more than a decade into it. There is joy in grandparenting. And one thing is that kids kind of, you know, not just the hugging and the kissing and the just fun that they bring to life, the lightness they bring to life, but they do kind of lighten up the heavy moments. So there is a lot of joy in that, but there is also sorrow. And so just learning to grandparent them and also hold those moments that I wish there were both of us. You know, I think too, recognizing that we can hold both grief and gratitude. We can hold joy and sorrow. We can hold both of them, and it's okay. It's going to look different on different days.
That is absolutely true. And, you know, it reminds me of a story that I read by author Robin Jones Gunn, who has been on the program before. And she had shared about losing her mother-in-law and how just it was so difficult, and that her husband was just really missing her. And the next thing they knew, they looked up and the kids were going to put on this nativity. You know, they were all dressed up, and they had gotten some of her dresses to wear for the wise men outfits, you know, because older lady dresses, they were very ornate, very nice. And and looking at little boys, you know, that looked like the perfect wise men outfit. And she described, as they started to come down the stairs, all of the adults kind of had this collective gasp, you know, like, oh gosh, that's Grandma Kay's dresses, like that's tender, that's sacred, you know, what's going to happen, what's going to say. And the grandfather, his initial reaction was just kind of get a little upset, you know, just to feel like, ooh, is that disrespectful? And I think, Lisa, that so often when we think as adults, we have all of these social restraints on grief, or what should we say, or what will other people think, or is this okay, or is this not okay? But kids just have such an innocence about them, and they have such a lack of restraint sometimes that can be kind of hard, but that can be kind of refreshing too. And the way that Robin tells it is that the kids said, oh no, Grandma Kay would want us to have her in this moment. And all of the adults said, yes, you're right. And somehow the children were able to bring that moment, you know, to a sweet moment, and to bring her in a way that I don't think adults can. So have there been any way that you have looked at your grandchildren now as they're growing? Can you see Dan in your kids parenting, in your grandchildren, that is healing for you?
Yeah, well, you know, my oldest grandson has his grandfather's name. So he got first dibs since he was the first one. And my son and daughter-in-law came to me and said, can we name him after Dad, after Dan? And so he carries his grandfather's name, which is so sweet. And he is, you know, the spitting image of his grandfather. So it's really sweet to see that. But kids are like that. Kids do not... they'll just say things. They're very black and white, especially the younger ones. You know, they'll talk about things. They'll talk about things. They will express things. And so they do just take away any of those social, like, sorry about that. They take away any kind of social. I'm sorry about that.
Lisa. Yeah, go ahead. You're good.
Okay. They take away any social, you know, just the way we feel awkward about it, the awkwardness, just as you said, when painting that picture, you know, it could have been a lot of these steps of going through grief are awkward, and kids just meet it head on. And, but kids are healing. And I think when, you know, just this weekend, we celebrated all the January birthdays in our family, and Dan's was one of them. And as my son was praying for all the January birthdays, he mentioned his dad, you know, Granddad Apollo. And when we sang happy birthday to him, you know, in the mix of all the names, you couldn't tell who was saying who first. Everybody said his name too. And so there is healing for those kids to know that he is still part of our family, and he is still part of our, you know, who we remember and who we celebrate having a birthday, even though he's in heaven.
And the flip side of that is that single grandparenting does bring some limitations, because you have the reality of his absence, and you're loving and you're caring for your grandchildren, but it's different and you can't change that. So how have you navigated some of those limitations, and maybe how you feel about those limitations as they come up?
Mm-hmm. Well, and we do all have limitations. It's not like I look around at my friends most of my friends are, you know, still happily married. They're in couples. They're doing things. And it's not like I look at them and bemoan my life or have envy over it. But I do recognize the differences in maybe their capacity and in some of the things they can do and in my own. And, you know, the truth is we all have limitations. And all grandparents. So whether that's time or resources or our age or physical capability or even a distance, you know, we may be distant from, some of my grandchildren live across the country. And so that's a limitation in what I can do with them or how often I see them. But I think I learned, as a single mom, I learned this and I still use it today. And that is that instead of saying, I can't do XYZ because I'm a solo mom, which is my natural bent to say, oh, I can't do that because I'm a solo mom, to switch it up and to say, because I'm a single mom, I'll do it this way. And so approach it and find what I can do. You know, I've always told my kids that I would have grandma camp. And I imagined that Dan and I would do it together, that we would, you know, that we would have the grandkids when they got a certain age over, you know, for a long weekend or a week, and we would have this like yearly grandparent camp. And honestly, part of me is like, do I have the capacity to do that? Like physically, you know, could I handle that? Well, I think what I'm going to have to do is, if that is still a dream of mine and something that I want to be part of my life, my grandchildren's life, and our memories, then I'm just going to have to approach it differently. Whether that means like I need to hire a college student to come alongside and help me, or whether I need to have just this certain age first and then that age next. I just need to maybe reimagine what I had imagined that it would be. But to learn to work within my limitations and not see them really as something that is negative, but something that just changes the way I grandparent. It may be I am become more creative. Maybe, you know, I will tell you one thing that I've thought of a lot. And that is, I've often wondered, as I've spent a week out with this child or a week with that child or flying up to Boston to bring these back home and have that flexibility to travel, I've often thought, would I do this if I had a husband at home? Would I have this freedom to move and to really be present for my kids geographically and physically like that, if I still had, you know, a husband at home that I was doing things with? Maybe, maybe not. But I think we all just have to learn to work with our limitations. And so for me, it's been saying, instead of saying, I can't do that, saying, how will I do that differently?
Lisa, I think that is just such an incredibly insightful reframing. That is such a great way. It's a good coping mechanism. It's a good way to have a positive outlook. It cultivates joy. It helps to bring gratitude in a situation. And I think it's applicable to so many more situations even than you're talking about, because there's so many times that we'll think, oh, I can't do this, whether it's financial limitations or you don't have family close by, whatever the situation is, we think, oh, well, I can't do that because, you know, I don't have family here. I don't have whatever that is. But hey, well, because I don't have family here, because, you know, I am a widow, because my financial resources are limited, or whatever the case may be, I'm going to do it. I need to do it this way. I can do it this way. I feel like I'm going to take that and run with it, because I think about so many limitations that I have, and you think, oh, well, I don't have this, but what do you have, you know? And I think, especially looking at what you have, just obviously for me looking in the outside in, Lisa, you obviously have a beautiful family filled with so much love. And just the fact that you were with Dan before he passed away, that God granted you that time, that memory, that connection, obviously there was something beautiful there to be preserved and to be able to share that through your legacy and to steward his legacy in that way, I think is such a gift for your grandchildren. And I just really love that. So I want to know, what are ways that you keep Dan's memory alive with your grandkids? Because none of them ever met him. He passed away before they were born. So how do you make him come to life?
He did, yes. You know, I am going to segue to a story about Prince William, because this really kind of gave me permission. I think sometimes when we watch other people walk through a certain experience or situation, we learn from them. And I really learned from him. It was a Mother's Day, and I think they had posted like on Instagram or something, these little Mother's Day cards that his children had written to their granny, Diana. That's what they call her. And there was followed, you know, some caption where he said he regularly talks to his kids about Granny Diana, and he regularly shares memories of Diana, because he tells them that they had two grandparents, and he really wants them to know her, because they were all, you know, she died also before they were born. And I think just reading that was like, okay, so it's, like I said, grief can be awkward, and we wonder if, like, am I allowed to feel this? Is it okay to, like, still be talking, you know, about him or about her or sharing stories? Should I be over it by now? I just think that's what our Western culture, either, you know, overtly or just somehow, you know, tells us. And I think we all need to know, yes, like, in your own family, it may look different, but tell the stories. Honor that grandparent. They are part of, not just to honor that grandparent, but because they're part of your grandchild's heritage and who they are.
That is absolutely beautiful. Well, I've got more questions, Lisa. And when we come back, I'm going to talk about just other lessons that you've learned and what your legacy is and what you're learning about how to encourage other people who are on this journey that is unexpected, unanticipated, sometimes unwelcome. But how do you still find joy and find that life can be good again, whether you're a solo mom or a grandmom? We'll have more with Lisa Aplo when we come back.
We live in a day when America's families are under attack like never before.
Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of the American Family Association.
The war against biblical principles rages on numerous fronts. The internet, Hollywood, Washington, D.C., America's corporate boardrooms, and the list goes on. At American Family Association, we're committed to standing against the enemies of God, the enemies of your family. And we recognize it's an impossible task without God's favor and your partnership. Thank you for being faithful to pray for this ministry, to give financially, and to respond to our calls for activism. What you do on the home front is crucial to what we do on the battlefront. We praise God for your faithfulness, and may He give us many victories in the battles ahead as we work together to restore our nation's biblical foundations.
Why are you knows me has always been a mystery. All my life I've been told I belong at the end of the line with all the other not quite, with all the never get it right. But it turns out they're the ones you were looking for all this time. 'Cause I'm just a nobody trying to tell everybody all about somebody who saved my soul. Ever since you rescued me, you gave my heart a song to sing. I'm living for the world to see, nobody but Jesus. I'm living for the world to see, nobody but Jesus.
Welcome back, friends. That is Nobody by Casting Crowns with Matthew West. And you may feel like that you're just somebody who's trying to tell the world about your legacy of faith. And we're doing that today with Lisa Apollo. She's a speaker, a best-selling author of Life Can Be Good Again, Putting Your World Back Together After It All Falls Apart. We're talking about grieving today. Lisa has had more than a decade as a journeying after losing her husband, and now she's talking with us about a newer phase of life and being a single grandparent. And listen, grieving with hope is about holding the hand of God as you navigate the pain of that loss, that messy, looping, back and forth sort of journey, and know that God is tenderly walking with you through every tear and every moment. It is finding comfort and remembering the love and the legacy of whoever it is that you've lost, letting their lives continue to shape yours in beautiful ways. And as you honor their memory, we also open our heart to the future, and we trust that God is still writing a good story for your life. Grieving with hope means leaning on God's promises, letting His grace heal your heart, sharing the love and wisdom that you've been given with those around you, including your grandchildren. And in doing this, you honor the past while allowing God to gently guide you toward a future that is filled with hope, that is filled with joy. And Lisa is walking this path. And Lisa, we know that grieving is just, it is so hard. But how has becoming a grandparent helped to bring healing to you in your grieving journey?
You know, new life is always deep comfort, isn't it? And man, there's such joy and just seeing the just squeals. I'm just thinking now, even as I said that, I was at the zoo the other day with one of my grandchildren, and one of my other sons found out that I was at the zoo. He was there with his wife and their two, and he said, "Hey, let's meet up. I didn't know you were at the zoo today." So we were like, "Let's meet at the, you know, jaguar exhibit." So I was waiting there, and all of a sudden I hear this "Nani!" and this little 2-year-old padding feet just running toward me with her arms and the biggest little smile on her face. And, you know, I crouched down and just scooped her up. And those kinds of things are just, man, they are gift, pure gift. And I think for me, one of the ways that it has been healing for me is not just the hugs and just being with them, but seeing the healing in my own children. You know, all of us who are single grandparents have come here by loss of some kind. And it has affected our children. And mine were still young, you know, teens and tweens and little ones, preschoolers. And I had a lot of fear. I really worried how this would impact them, how they would react in their grief, and, you know, how they would, if they would act out in their grief. And just, you know, as I was praying for my own future, just really, really praying for their futures. And so as I see my children, you know, married, in their own families, having their own children, it is like the answer to so many prayers I prayed for them. And so seeing them flourishing in their families is very healing for me. You know, I know some grandparents who may be listening to that are in fresh loss, and they maybe had, you know, a spouse that they were, you know, grandparenting with. And so I would just say to them that to just, you know, like you said earlier about that, the story with Robin Gunn, to let that, you know, to guide those conversations, to let this be something where you are able to teach your children and your grandchildren how to deal with loss and how to deal with big disappointments and how to deal with, you know, pain and let, you know, the relationships that you have be healing together.
Well, that's a big responsibility. And maybe, you know, some grandparents are listening thinking that feels like a lot of pressure, but it's also a fantastic opportunity because you, if you realize that your grandchildren and your children, like you said, are watching you and they're learning from you, they're watching you navigate this path, one that you didn't expect. And how do you steward that? As you talked about earlier, what do you think that your children or grandchildren are learning from you and your journey as a single grandparent, especially about your faith?
You know, we know that the best lessons are not taught, that they're caught. And even when we think of our own grandparents, you know, when we think about what they taught us or what stands out, it's not so much maybe, you know, these lessons, these didactic lessons that they gave us, but really just watching them go through things or watching who they were. And so, you know, for the single grandparent who's walking through loss, we have an opportunity to let our life teach incredible lessons. And they're going to last so much longer than like that museum, gift shop, toy that we buy, or they're not going to remember what we gave them for their 3-year-old birthday or their 12-year-old birthday. They are going to remember who we were with them and the faith that we demonstrated for them. And so I think of the lessons that we have an opportunity to teach. It doesn't mean it's not painful. It doesn't mean that we do it perfectly or that we never have to cry or that we never express you know, regret or that we wish that we weren't walking through this. But at the same time to say, you know, I trust God. Like, this is not what I wanted, but I trust God. Or, you know, that we are finding joy when life is hard. You know, I think, too, to find that God meets our needs, that we have, that we are a grandparent that has an active and dependent relationship with God and what that looks like. So that they see that these aren't just stories that they go to, that they hear about, or that they read in the Bible, or that we read to them, or that they hear on Sundays, but that we are able to kind of have flesh on and show them what it looks like in real life. You know, I always say that I never, ever would have wanted this story. Like, if you would ask me right now, I would say I would trade it. I would be like, door number two, please. I did not request this one. However, this is the story that God has allowed. And as long as I'm here, you know, we can use it to in ways that God will reveal himself in ways that we probably never would have seen otherwise. And that impacts us, but it also impacts our grandchildren because we are becoming people who will grandparent them differently, who will speak to them differently, who will pray with them differently. So all of those are huge lessons that our grandparents can glean from us, whether we say it in words or whether they're just watching us.
You know, you just reminded me of a lesson that I learned from my granny who went to be with Jesus the year before last. And she had lost her dad right around when I was born. And so I never knew him. And my great-grandmother, you know, was a single grandparent her whole life. And I didn't think about, you know, I didn't think consciously, oh, what am I learning from watching her journey? But just sitting here, I just had this realization that I did learn something from her. And I remember my granny telling me this story about her dad, about how she was a little girl and they had gone into this department store. She wanted this little pair of red patent leather shoes, but they couldn't afford them. And the dad said, no, you know, we can't have them. But he went and took an extra job and earned the money and gave them to her, you know, as a really special gift. And that's one of the biggest stories I remembered. But as I grew up and as I learned more about our family history, I learned that, you know, her dad had been a man who had a lot of burdens and a lot of pain. He had had polio. He just had a lot of things that he carried. And, you know, the way that I heard other people talking about him was not how I heard her talking about him. And so one day when I was older, I kind of had the courage to ask her because, like we've talked about, kids are a little unfiltered. And I remember her looking at me and saying, well, Jessica, you have a choice. You can forgive or you can not forgive. And I chose forgiveness and I chose to focus on the good things. And I'm just thinking that that memory just came back to me now, and thinking that that was part of her legacy and just healing. And, you know, she could have easily told me, oh yeah, he did this and this and this, but what good would that have done in that moment? And she chose a different path. And so I want to know, Lisa, from you, what does legacy mean to you as you are stewarding your legacy and Dan's legacy now?
I think more precisely, like more, it stands out more clearly that when I began to have grandchildren, it helped me see beyond just this generation. You know, for so long I was parenting these kids and trying to help them get through their loss and their grief and just, you know, showing up to the basketball game and teaching them the lessons. And once you have grandchildren, you realize it's beyond this generation and even their generation, that that a legacy isn't something that we leave when we die. It's not something that we, you know, bequeath in a will to them, but that it's something that we are creating every day as we live our life. And just like you shared about your grandmother, that is a legacy that you continue to draw from today. And we are, whether we're doing it through praying very intentionally over our grandchildren, or spending one-on-one time with them, or helping them navigate hard things, or just, you know, taking them and just enjoying them and creating memories with them, we are really creating that legacy and the discipleship that God intends for us. That as we pass the baton, you know, the baton, I really see it passing from my hand down a generation, where I'm really going to become less and less in the scheme of things. And, you know, I the Lord willing, have a long time left, but, you know, that I will be able to pass this baton well. And I know Psalm 78 is one of the scriptures that I've gone to a lot. It talks about the purpose that we have, where we, you know, we make known the things that God has taught us, that we pass on to the next generation, the things that we've seen and we've heard from God and that were told to us. And, you know, grandparenting is more than just doing a craft or showing up, you know, on the holidays. It really is about giving them the wisdom and the insight and the discipling faith that that God has given us, and sowing that into them. So I think as a single grandparent, why that even sticks out more is because when you have somebody who's in heaven, you realize heaven is not that far off. And that the things of this world grow strangely dim. And I think you realize what matters and what doesn't, and how to live for eternity. And I really hope that that does affect, you know, my grandparenting and the legacy that I'm making with them.
Well, you know, you remind me of the scripture from 1 Thessalonians that starts in chapter 4, verse 13. Brothers and sisters, we do not want you to be uninformed about those who sleep in death, so that you do not grieve like the rest of mankind who have no hope. For we believe that Jesus died and rose again, and so we believe that God will bring with Jesus those who have fallen asleep in him. According to the Lord's word, we tell you that we who are still alive, who are left until the coming of the Lord, will certainly not precede those who have fallen asleep. For the Lord himself will come down from heaven with a loud command, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trumpet call of God, and the dead in Christ will rise first. After that, we who are still alive and are left will be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air, and so we will be with the Lord forever. Verse 18, therefore, encourage one another with these words. Lisa, I think one of the most beautiful things is that your grandchildren will meet Dan one day, and they will know him because you have shared and stewarded his legacy. You have introduced them to him. You have told them about him. And when they get to heaven, they will know him. They will recognize him. They will run to him. And he will have that grandparenting journey, which is why we grieve as those who have hope, because we do have that hope. So Lisa, what encouragement would you give? How can people find you? Thank you so much for sharing this message. It has meant so much.
You know, I think so often in loss, we think, I know I did, everything good is behind me. Like life has taken a forever shift from a before life was this to after life is now, what I didn't expect and I didn't want. And I think we can, you know, we can begin to buy into the lie that, the enemy would love us to buy into, that everything good is behind us. But for the single grandparent, we have to know that while we grieve with hope, and that grief is hard, it is excruciating, it is a lot of work, that we have great purpose, and that maybe even more so now, because we are stewarding that joy, that legacy, that heritage. For two, we are now the sole one who gets to impart that and sow into our grandchildren.
Lisa,
and
that
enjoy
is
them.
That is beautiful, beautiful. That is your prescription for hope, honoring the past while inspiring the future. May the Lord bless you and keep you, my friends, and I'll see you right here tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.